Welcome to This Is Whole Life, a podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida.
Join me, Ken Wetmore, lead pastor, and Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor, along with our communication team, Randy and Lucas. Take a look back, a look deeper, and a peek into the week ahead.
Here we explore meaningful conversations about spirituality, community, and living with purpose.
We don't have all the answers, but we are walking the journey together.
Wherever you're listening from, you're wanted here.
This is Whole Life.
Hey everyone, welcome to This Is Whole Life, a podcast that originates from Orlando, Florida at the Whole Life Church. And every week, we dig a little bit deeper into the message from that past weekend, just so that you have an idea of what's going on here. And yeah, hopefully it's something that tickles your curiosity. Maybe it feeds your need for a little speak about whatever that subject might be, because you just never know. And if you're close to Orlando, that could create a little foodie in us here and there, because that's been known to happen. Although I got an email from Tim. Tim, I don't know, Mr. Bachman, how it escaped my inbox, but I was going through old emails and he's like, hey guys, you know, I love the show, love y'all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the food talk has been sorely lacking. So maybe pick it up a little bit. And I was like, wow, okay, well, that's probably a fair assessment considering. But we did talk a little bit last week about what our best Memorial Day food was. And we were going to check out a coffee shop that Ken suggested for its, was it vegan or just vegetarian? The coffee, which one was it?
Oh, that was the monkey something.
Drunken Monkey.
Yeah, that one.
And I looked at it, and I have not been there, so we're going to add that to the list to make sure, and then we'll do a full report. Maybe we should...
I also got a really good suggestion of a completely vegetarian, vegan restaurant that they said the person who had eaten there told me that the... they had some sort of beef. He said it was the closest thing to real beef he'd ever tasted. It was so, it was very, very good. And it's, I think it's a Cuban vegan restaurant. Let me see if I can.
Cuban vegan.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, this is it. Alo Vegano. The letter A, the word lo, L-O.
Alo Vegano.
Alo Vegano.
That sounds like there should be like...
That sounds perfect.
Vegano, vegano. Should be a song or a...
So I am planning on checking that out here sometime very soon because it sounds delicious. And...
High stakes.
Why is it that I don't...
Low and high.
Why is it, Melanie, that it seems like one side of the table is less interested than the other side of the table?
He had me at high stakes. So I don't know what you're talking about, Ken. But no, we definitely, sorry about that. We will definitely make sure that anything new, we did hit in lieu of the Drunken Monkey because it was Lucas's turn to decide where we were going, for Thursday Creative Morning. And we ended up, so if you guys are Winter Garden and you're like, the only good coffee shops are downtown, but there's no place to park, like Old Town Town, there's no place to park, right? You got to park and walk a country mile. Where did we go?
Deeply.
Deeply, that's right. Deeply, it's right around 50, so it's like right by, yeah. Just, you know, and it's a nice location.
It's legit.
It is packed.
They have homemade Pop-Tarts.
Oh, those are always good.
And those, yeah, that wasn't bad. Well, no, what did I got? Oh, I was stupid. I had to go to the gym, and I felt like I had to stay. I saw Pastor Doug there as well. He's at my gym now, and we work out a lot at the same time. And we both ride stationary bike as a primary source of cardio. So we bike alongside each other, and he was really putting in an extra workout. And I was like, man, I had a churro this morning. Now, not a churro like you're thinking, oh, a little braided whatever churro thing. This thing was like a foot long, 3-4 inches wide, And it had caramel sauce drizzled down the center.
Like a churro croissant. Oh, man.
It was ridiculous. I was so sick. By the time I was done eating that, I have really been keeping my watch on my sugar intake. And I was like, well, today's good for the rest of the week, I guess.
And you were at the gym for 6 hours.
Yeah. But it was good. It really was good. So that, and they have those at all their locations, I believe. So no, it's not just special to there. But anyway. Okay. This week, the sermon that will get you the most questions and the most deeply thought of, heartfelt, I just don't know, is there an answer? And Ken, do you think there are answers? Or is it just...
It's always answers. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not.
Well, okay, touche. That's a good, in the Family Feud. Good answer, good answer. Because that's what it feels like, because I feel like sometimes... there aren't any good answers, or maybe necessarily answers that you can be like, yep, that's the one. But the message was part of our, or it was the ending, right? This was it. Don't forget.
Yep.
So we don't have to worry about not forgetting anymore.
No, we're done.
Well, we just got out of that one in time.
What was it about?
That's right. Don't forget the God who created you. And so when I saw the title, I of course had no idea where you were going message-wise. And it really turned out to be the Sabbath.
No. No, Randy, it wasn't. It was about it? Not forgetting the God who created you.
Right, but, you know, we started with Exodus. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy.
Right.
And then we went to Mark 2:27, and Jesus said, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of the people and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. Requirements, that's a... I'm thinking that that's got to be some kind of, I don't know, interpretation problem. One of those, you know, what they really meant to say was not requirement, but I don't know. Maybe that's Melanie. Ken?
We have no idea what you're trying to do, Randy. Okay, we're here for the ride.
What are our needs that Sabbath was created to meet? And then we went to Exodus 28 verses 11. Remember to observe the Sabbath day. So we went to a different, well, still NLT, but a different, well, kind of the same one. And then...
So do you want me just to make this shorter? Are you wanting to make sure that people have a long drive?
Well, no, I'm just, you know, because it's if it wasn't about the Sabbath, I'm... well, go ahead. Yeah, let's go ahead. I will defer to the man who actually wrote the message and...
So
delivered the message.
It was about remembering the God who created you, and the Sabbath is the vehicle that helps us do that.
That's
so
right.
So when you say it's about the Sabbath, you're saying that let's go ahead and just use it. Like my family, number of years ago, did a road trip from Nashville, Tennessee, all the way out to California,
Ooh. And
there and back. And it would be like saying that the road trip was about the car that we drove. It was a Jetta. Mm. We drove a Volkswagen Jetta from Nashville all the way back. And that would be like saying that that trip was about the car, which I guess you can make the argument it was. We spent a lot of time in the car, but it would be missing the point that the trip really wasn't about the car. It was about the experience that we were having. And I think that that's what really gets lost a lot with the Sabbath. It becomes all about the Sabbath, and we kind of forget the purpose of the Sabbath, what the Sabbath is trying to do, which when you look at that fourth commandment, and it's really interesting because in Exodus, the fourth commandment talks about, for in 6 days, the Lord created heavens and earth. But in Deuteronomy, it actually talks about the God that redeemed you. And so the Sabbath serves two purposes. It reminds us who created us, and it reminds us who redeemed us. Mm. And it's a reminder that we have a God who created us and redeemed us. And I think that's a really important distinction, because I think there's a lot of Sabbath worship that is idolatrous in the way that we go about doing it. We worship the Sabbath rather than the God that gave us the Sabbath and is using the Sabbath as a tool to help us be in relationship with God. And I love the Sabbath. I believe in keeping the Sabbath holy. And I think that that means that when I'm doing it right, it creates deeper relationship with God. It's not that I keep the Sabbath better. It's that I have a better relationship with God. And so that's why I'm going to push back when you say it was a sermon about the Sabbath, because it talked about the Sabbath, but what it was really about was, how do we really remember the God that created us, remember the God that redeemed us, remember that God is wanting to be in the midst of our life, that He wants to be a major part of our life. How do we always remember that? Because in the hustle and bustle of life, it's easy to forget some of the things that are the most important to us. We see it in marriages. We see it even in with our kids at times, that we will get so caught up in earning a living and doing the things that have to be done that we don't put an emphasis and time into the relationships that really are what make life worth having. And so the Sabbath is a tool that God really set aside for us to help transport us into relationship, deeper relationship with Him every week. And one of the things I talked about was the equality of it. It's like every single person on earth can have a Sabbath. There's no one who can't, because it's like not accessible. We all have, you know, the same amount of time. We're all in the same time continuum together. And we all have the opportunity to access this Sabbath. And that's one of the beautiful things about it. It's not like a place that you have to go to experience it. It is a thing in time. And so that's one of the things I get really passionate about when it comes to this topic, because I think particularly for those of us who have grown up Seventh-day Adventists, we miss the plot sometimes. And the Sabbath becomes more about the Sabbath than it does about the relationship that the Sabbath was created to serve. Mm.
Well, that worked out exactly as I thought it might.
If you goaded me enough, I would.
Well, I figured if I kept going down the list, eventually you would interrupt me and be like, all right, that's enough. You know better than that. But no, really what I wanted was, without asking you, because I think the answer would have been different if I'd asked you the question, well, you know, why the church, or why the Sabbath, and what, you know, like, what are we missing and what do we do wrong? And I think it would have come from a different angle. But the synopsis that you gave, I think, was a good place to start, because we had a lot of questions, and there were not so many questions. There was a lot of theology points that were brought up in the chat this week. Someone who has been a bit of a protagonist in our chat had some of the best questions this week.
That's awesome.
And so they were totally participating. And one of the questions was like, well, you can't just pick one out of the 10, because, you know, we all sin. We're never going to be able to keep the Sabbath holy, and what does holy mean and all those things. And so people had some really good back and forth debate about that. And I think everyone comes down, there's this underlying feeling, and maybe Nate in the Slack channel maybe had it best. And he said, as a recovering Adventist church pastor, every time there's a discussion of the Sabbath, we get lost in the right and the wrong legal actions of the keeping the Sabbath. When the children of Israel were invited into a covenant with God as His chosen people, they didn't accept the invitation to be children, but rather chose servanthood by saying, "We will keep every law." They missed out on the beauty of being the people of God. I feel like Adventists are missing out on God's invitation of the joy of the Sabbath over the legalities of something God never considered in legal terms.
Yeah. Thanks, Nate.
Yeah.
You're still an Adventist pastor.
Well, yeah. I mean, once always, right?
I mean,
you can say, but
Nate does amazing chaplaincy work now.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Of course. And I think that was where you forget the differences of, you know, as a kid, it was all about, you're right, it was all about the Sabbath. As it was, I don't ever think I ever remember as a kid listening to someone talk about the Sabbath and leading with the part you led with. Don't forget, because you want this relationship, you want this connection. This is the God that provided this for you. Instead of, here is a list of things we don't do on the Sabbath, and it's this great day that you can't do anything. Like the advertising was completely wrong, completely upside down to me, for going like, wow, great. A whole day to do nothing I like. This is awesome. I hope we get, can we make this 2 days a week? I mean, can we make Sunday this day too? Because one day is just simply not enough. And so I think
it's sad that a lot of the people I grew up with, and I can't speak to today, but I just think a lot of the people that I grew up would talk pretty badly about people who worshiped on Sunday, and yet they couldn't wait for Sunday to roll around. They couldn't wait for Sabbath to be over so they could get back to, you know, to Sunday. And it's a sad thing. It's like, I know that, you know, one of the Jewish communities that I was able to interact with, one of the things they taught me was that everything is either is looking forward to the Sabbath. It's like they can't wait for the Sabbath to show up, and everything, the whole week is a preparation to get to the Sabbath. And if you think about it, if you think in terms of like a person that you're a vacation that you're going to go on a vacation, or you're going to meet somebody that's really important, every day you're counting down till you get to go, till you get to see this person, and you're doing things to prepare so that you're ready for it. And you're not, because you're like, oh, checklist, got to do this, but because it's like, hey, I want to maximize this time with this person, or I want to maximize my vacation experience. So I want to make sure that I do all these other things in the lead up to it, so that I can have the best, most relaxed, most amazing experience when I get to this spot. And to me, that's the whole, I grew up with like, oh, you have to be, you know, you need to, you know, Friday's the preparation day for the Sabbath, and everything needs to be, you know, and you're like pulling your hair out and trying to get everything. And it was more of like preparing to go to the dentist than it was to go on this like trip to a place you really wanted to be.
Yeah.
And so I would love to tell you, with my kids and my family, I've done a better job, but this has been a growing experience in my life where I'm trying to grow. And it's also something as a pastor that I'm constantly trying to figure out, how does this work for me? What does Sabbath mean for me? And I've gone through a lot of iterations in my pastoral career. I've been on the iteration that was, oh, this is just a day like, is Sabbath just like for everybody else? And I'm just doing kind of volunteer work here, and just like, you know, all the people that volunteer in the Sabbath schools and do all that stuff. Been through that iteration. I've been through the iteration where it's like, no, this is a hardcore work day, and I'm going to try to figure out another day of the week that's going to be my Sabbath. Because it's not like I get to volunteer for Sabbath school and then I have church free and then I have the afternoon free. No, I've got stuff that I'm expected to be at. And when people come and find me, they're not there to, you know, it's a work day. There's a lot of work going on there. And so, you know, I had somebody ask me a really good question a week ago. I don't even think they knew that this was the sermon that was going to be, but it was the week before. And they said, so what does Sabbath, keeping Sabbath, look like for you? And I said, for me, it's a work in progress, really. I don't have it completely figured out as a pastor. Like when I worked in news and television, I can tell you exactly what it was. It was amazing. It was different. And at that time I was doing a church plant. I would preach on Sabbath, but I can just tell you that there is a world of difference. Between being working at my job and preaching as a fellow member of the church, and being a pastor on staff at a church. And it's not just whole life. It's like I've been at a number of churches. And my point is, like, I'm still trying to figure out. And I've gotten to the point where the Sabbath is the Sabbath. Like, for me, Sabbath is Sabbath. And so I'm trying to figure out, if it's about relationship, if it's about remembering the God that created me, that changes it a little bit, as opposed to a day where I'm just trying to avoid labor or something like that. And so, again, I'm kind of talking and thinking out loud in a lot of ways, because, again, this it's always interesting when you do a sermon and you go into it thinking you're going to come, you think you know where you're headed, and then you get into the into the sermon, you kind of come across some concepts that are new to you. You think, and the research that you do and the things that you're thinking through, you're like, well, I'd not thought about it like that before. Like the whole that Sabbath is a vehicle. I think I'd maybe heard it, but I'd never really internalized it for me until prepping for this sermon. And I've really been thinking a lot about that. If the Sabbath is the vehicle that's getting me to relationship, then how does that change how I view the Sabbath? How does it, maybe it doesn't change the things I do, but does it change the way that I do those things? Is it changed the way the paradigm of those things? And that's something that I've been really kind of letting marinate and thinking through with this.
It's weird because in other jobs, you're right, when you get here and it's like, well, you know, we all have to, there's things that every Sabbath that have to be done for church to go off and for people to be served and have their needs met when they come to church with an expectation that there is someone here to walk beside them and to have community with. So it does change the idea. Is even before church wasn't a thing for me, there was only a couple of stretches in my life where I was like, yeah, 7 days a week, I can do this. I own my own business. So if I can work six, I can work seven. It's just going to be all that bet. I'm all, you know, more money, more. That didn't really turn out to be true, to be completely honest, looking back at it. But also that it wasn't a, oh man, I'm missing out on something. But yet I knew I was missing out on something because even in that time, a day off to just relax and not work was, I mean, a huge advantage. And growing up that way, maybe that had some subliminal, you know, markings to it. I don't know. But it does change your viewpoint. And Lucas, I was wondering that, I mean, you grew up in Brazil.
Yeah.
And I mean, what is there a difference between what, like your community that you grew up with? Because you grew up with an academic church, right?
Yeah.
And so was it something, did the Sabbath feel different when you got to the United States? Or does it just feel like, eh, if you're an Adventist in Brazil or an Adventist wherever, you're just an Adventist, you kind of understand it?
Well, it's not that different.
Yeah.
I think it's just where I'm from is very conservative. So the way the things that we do on Sabbath or the things that we are not allowed to do on Sabbath are kind of different. But I grew up with this idea. There's this book called The Shabbat by, I think, Joshua Heschel.
Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a pastor that was preaching about this book when I was, you know, in school. And he talks about the idea of the Sabbath being a palace in time. So I kind of grew up with this idea of, you know, you work 6 days under the tyranny of the things of the world. And then Sabbath is a day for you to completely disconnect. So regardless of the place I am, I kind of try to bring this with me. Mm. And yeah, I want to say it's very different from here to Brazil.
Yeah. Okay. It feels a little bit like from where I'm from as well. It was very, you know, very rule-based. It wasn't until I moved that I actually was like, maybe I could actually enjoy the Sabbath. So, and that was because I saw people doing things that I would never ever be allowed to do or thought would be like, wait, does the pastor know you do this? Because you're like, you have a position in the church. I mean, you know, we threw out people like head deacons for way less than what you're up to. And so I'm just like, this is good here. Like, this is, oh, well, this is what I believe. And that was the thing that I thought maybe was the most important. If you're is just sharing kind of how, like Lucas just did, how you see it, what influenced you and why you make certain decisions, because it at least it brings an open conversation where it doesn't feel shame-filled to say, this is why I feel the way I do. And letting that resonate and just kind of sit in you has changed my mind about other some things in one direction, some in another. So I can't say that it's all been one way or the other, but just ways that it's made the Sabbath feel more special to me, I think is really what it's done. So I think that how you see it is, I mean, people want to know. I want to know because sometimes I feel like, man, I don't think this is either this isn't right or maybe it's just me. And if someone else is like, oh no, I don't do, yes, I do. And then the reasons it's always interesting to find out, like maybe it's upbringing, maybe it's a book. But that's been a fun journey since we've been in Florida for sure. I want to get to Ken had, where was it? Oh, here we go. The weekly return to Eden. And I think someone asked a question. Did we have a question about that?
Yeah, we actually did.
Let's put these in where it makes it seem logical, because that was one that I just wanted to ask Ken about, and I think the question does it better than probably I was going to. So go ahead.
This person is actually asking Ken to clarify this idea a little bit. Could Ken go over this point again and clarify it a bit more? The Sabbath, an opportunity for a weekly return to Eden. I'm not quite sure I understood what is meant by a weekly return to Eden.
Yeah, this is preface that this is not a theological concept that I just created. This is actually one that's out there. A number of different theologians proposed that the idea of the Sabbath was to create, just like, so the Garden of Eden was a confined space on this earth. It wasn't, I think sometimes we think of the Garden of Eden as like being the entire earth or something. It wasn't. It was a specific area that God created and set aside, made a special space for Adam and Eve to live in and to be in. And in this garden, things are perfect. God comes and spends time with them on a regular basis. While they have responsibilities inside of the garden, it doesn't appear that they were particularly taxing. And so once sin comes along and they have to leave the garden, then what? Well, the Sabbath was already instituted when God did creation, so obviously there's the garden. But basically, in Exodus, and particularly in the fourth commandment, God seems to kind of point out that while we may have been exiled from Eden, He left a time in time for us to enter into Eden every week, to have a time that what is with Him. So, you know, one of the characteristics of the curse that sin brought was that we would have to by the sweat of your brow you will earn a living, basically. Well, what does the Sabbath do? It gives us a break from that. It's a stop. God gives you permission not to be out in the field plowing. In fact, He tells you, don't be out in the field plowing. Go ahead and take a break. And it's the Garden of Eden that all the animals got along together. There's that kind of idea of the Garden of Eden that you see in, I think, Isaiah and Jeremiah, where they talk about the lion laying down with the lamb, so on and so forth. And again, in this time off on the Sabbath, God says that all your animals get a break on that day. You don't leave your animals out to do the work while you're not. And so it's just kind of this beautiful picture of what God originally intended, to be in deep relationship with us in a space. And so it's a concept that I really love. I love this idea that we every week get to go back to that garden where things are restored, where what's broken is restored.
Mm. I actually have a question based on that. For people that don't like believe the Sabbath as the holy day for them, can they access the Eden through another like vehicle? Or is this specifically reserved for the Sabbath? I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Great question. So going back to something that I said in the sermon, I would challenge my students at Middle Tennessee School of Anesthesia when I was teaching the religion course at that school. And quick side story here. Middle Tennessee School of Anesthesia was started by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It was a part of Madison College. It was a school to train nurse anesthetists. Over the years, the school was sold, became its own nonprofit, but they always retained the Seventh-day Adventist heritage that they had, and they would have a Seventh-day Adventist pastor come in and teach religion and specifically Seventh-day Adventist beliefs to the students. Each class would usually have somewhere right in the range of 70 students. Of those students, usually less than 5 were Seventh-day Adventists.
Wow.
And we would have a number of all kinds, I mean, just whatever denominational or religious affiliations you can imagine, we had in every class. We had, you know, all the Protestant, Catholic, we had Buddhists, we had Muslims, we had atheists, we had agnostics. So we had just a very rich conversation when we would have conversation about religious things, because there's so many different perspectives in the room. And it was interesting to me that I did have a couple of the students who are agnostic who tried out the Sabbath anyway. And you know what they told me? They loved it. They're like, this is amazing. This is phenomenal. this is good stuff. Why would anybody not do this? Because the blessing is there. Even for people who didn't believe in a God, when you do things with God the way that the owner's manual tells you to do it, it doesn't matter. You're going to get a blessing out of it. Now, do I think that there is the full blessing that you can get out of it there? I don't think so, because the full blessing to me is remembering the God that created me. And yet, even people who didn't believe in God that would practice a Sabbath found a blessing in it, because it was a chance to stop and reflect, spend time. A lot of the my students that were agnostic to do this, they would spend extra time with their family, is usually what I'd hear back from them. They'd be like, "Oh, I spent 24 hours connecting with the most important people in my life." They weren't looking at it religiously. They would go play games with their kids. They would go to the movies with their partner. They would do those things. And they talked about how refreshing it was, because these people are neck deep in academics and studying and learning clinicals. It's such an intensive program. And for one day to just be able to focus on your family, let go of what's happening the other 6 days of the week, was an incredible thing for them. And I had several students who actually started keeping Sabbath. They didn't become Seventh-day Adventists, but they started keeping Sabbath because of the benefit that they found in their own life from doing it. And so to me, there's so many wonderful things about the Sabbath. And it makes me feel sad that so many times in my own life, I have not valued the gift that I have within my own, that I take it for granted. It's like, when I lived in New Zealand and I just looked at the mountains every day, and it's like, oh, it just became normal. It's just beautiful. It's okay. It's like, it's just my normal. And you don't really realize how many people are starved for a break, a stop. John Mark Comer wrote The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, not as Seventh-day Adventist pastor, but he keeps the Sabbath, the Friday night to Saturday night with his family. And then he does his Sunday routine as a pastor, but he keeps his family day with his family. If you read The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, he has a whole chapter on keeping the Sabbath and what it means. And it would, if you didn't know that it wasn't written by a Seventh-day Adventist pastor, you'd probably think it was, with the way he talks about it. But again, it's this just beautiful gift that so many people have found and realized, wow, there's a lot of worth to this, a lot of added value when done correctly. When it is viewed as a relationship builder as opposed to an idol to be worshiped, and that you have to appease the idol so it won't rain down wrath on you, and you have to, as opposed to being like, no, this isn't about appeasing an idol. This is about spending time with my Creator and the people and things that He has created, and me engaging in those most meaningful parts of life.
Hmm. Is it easier though for someone like maybe some of your students and, you know, maybe Comer to not have been saddled from the beginning with all the expectations and the baggage and the worry at night about, man, it's Sabbath and I'm reading a Louis L'Amour book.
Oh,
I know. When the lights go down, Louis L'Amour came out. All I'm saying, under the covers of darkness and my blankets and pillows. That was, you know, but it was always like, oh, no. So maybe the message is even clearer if you don't have that to start with. And if we could do
if you're going to just embrace the positive things from the beginning.
Then I wonder, because then you have to, doesn't that make you think, even if you, I mean, I know I'm not agnostic, so I can't speak for someone who would be, but like, it would almost seem like, man, this is a really good idea. And somebody believes that some deity or higher power or however they would view that did it because they think I need it. And if Ken's right, then the things you said, you know, that the equality of it, the return to Eden, the faith and trust over anxiety, to remind us who we really are, we're desired, and that relationship. When you start thinking it, like, wow, this is This is really cool. I mean,
it really meets a lot of needs, doesn't it?
What
it
if this
like
was
really
right?
genuinely meets a lot of needs.
Well, yeah. And plus, I think the reason, part of the reason why people resonate with it who are not even, you know, necessarily looking at it from a religious perspective is because our bodies are on a circa septin rhythm. We're on a 7-day rhythm. Our immune systems reset approximately every 7 days. There are other aspects of what it is to be human, and actually in some of the other species as well. So I wonder if it just falls right into our natural rhythm that we've been created with.
I believe that. And yeah. To me, it's the God who created you knows how you function best. And, you know, Melanie and I were talking about this a little bit on Friday after I rehearsed my sermon. We were kind of talking about some things and, you know, does God punish you for not keeping the Sabbath and so on and so forth? And my contention is that the manufacturer of your vehicle isn't punishing you when you don't change the oil.
That.
It's just there's something that's going to happen if you don't change
the
oil.
It's
nobody hates you. We just told you you need to do it every so many miles or you're going to break down. It's not because somebody hates you. It's because that's the way the vehicle was created. And if you follow the manual, you're going to get the maximum life out of that vehicle. And the same thing I believe is true with the Sabbath. It's like people are like, oh, God's going to be so angry and he's going to hurt you. Well, no, God created you a certain way and God knows the consequences that come from us just trying to blaze on 7 days a week without ever taking a break.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's one thing on Saturday I was thinking that I wanted to touch on today, and Melanie just volunteered to go first. And so give me one thing that you do during the week, Monday through Sunday, and you get to Sabbath, and you also do it on the Sabbath, but it makes it like that much better because it's on the Sabbath.
Wow, something I do.
Yeah, you do it during the week because it's either something that brings you enjoyment, it's something you need to do because it's essential to you. It can be anything, but what's one thing that you do all week long, but then when you get to Sabbath and you do it, it may not be every Sabbath, but you do it and you're like, oh man, there's just something about this on the Sabbath.
Well, I do tend to sleep every day of the week, but it never usually happens late afternoon unless it's on Saturday. So Saturday is my afternoon nap. If I don't have something else to attend,
that's on my top five
list.
That's
a little treat.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Lucas.
Nap?
Oh.
That's such a good one. I can't even think about anything else.
Play activities.
Okay. So I think that when I am doing Sabbath right, one of my favorite things is the added opportunity for time with my family.
Mm.
That I see my family the rest of the week, but it's a chance to do some things together, sometimes to talk about things that come up during a church service or have just more meaningful time together. So that would be one thing. And then another thing that I think is extra special for me on Sabbath is I like to have the best meals on Sabbath.
Mm.
I like to have my best meals on Sabbath.
Man, these are all in my top five. You guys haven't gone outside that list yet. I like it. I was going to say same thing. We do, well, schedules permitting, both of our kids still live at home. So dinner is the one meal we try very strenuously to make sure everyone sits around the dinner table yet for dinner each night during the week. Doesn't always happen, but we're pretty good about it. But no matter where you are on Sabbath, if you're at someone's house for lunch, you're out, you're whatever, you're home, there's something about lunchtime that is just, it's almost like the 11:30 most holy time to worship in a church building. For some reason, it just fits. Maybe it's just tradition, but that's one of my favorite things. And the other is just being on my Harley or out in nature, kayaking somewhere out. Sometimes it's more, for me personally, it's the Harley because I'm sometimes by myself, which is on purpose to just be out and be away and just enjoy things by myself. But that and just the water. I love being at the ocean. That was the other one. For people in Florida, y'all know we have an ocean like real close East Coast and a little bit further West Coast, depending on the vibes you're looking for. But the same thing, the vehicle versus the destination. It's like we hadn't been to the beach and I couldn't even tell you the last time. And we went a couple of weeks ago and I was like, oh, man, do we miss the beach? This is such a relaxing afternoon and it automatically brings me closer to God. And so I kind of resonated with that too. Lucas, what else do we got for questions? We have what, two more?
Yeah.
Two more, cool.
So in regards to the Sabbath as a vehicle, is it supposed to be a comfortable vehicle or not?
Hmm.
Yeah. Maybe not too comfortable, but maybe not uncomfortable either. I don't know. All metaphors break apart at some point. So I don't think that you necessarily want it to be the vehicle that you're so comfortable in that you never get out to explore and to be, you get to the destination, you just turn around. On the other hand, I don't think that the Sabbath should be uncomfortable. I don't think it should be something that it's like, oh, this is just a horrible thing that I have to do to get to that destination. So yeah. Somewhere in the middle. How about that?
I grew up as an SDA in a conservative church. Eating out after church was never heard of back then. Is there anything wrong with that if you are using the time to connect with loved ones?
Yeah, I appreciate Stanley asking me that live in front of everybody for sure.
I didn't hear your answer, so.
You didn't? No,
I missed that part.
So. I had a number of people tell me they didn't hear my answer. I thought I answered it pretty clearly.
No, I legit didn't miss that part.
This is a fun one because we will have a lot of different people that have very strong feelings one way or the other on it, much like swimming on Sabbath. That's another one.
You're in over the shin, it's a sin.
Yeah, well, that's what some say. And can I just say, by the way, this is one of the other fascinating things to me. It is so fascinating. If you travel around the world and experience Sabbath in different cultures, things that are absolutely forbidden in one culture are absolutely what everybody does in another culture. And for a lot of people, that can be mind-blowing when you're like, what? And so I really, as a pastor, try to avoid giving you can do this and you can't do that answers. And the reason I do is not because I don't have opinions on it. I do. But I think it's I think people try to cheat code the Sabbath. They want somebody to tell them the cheat code so they can just do it and not have to really wrestle with what is it that is connecting me with God. And I'm not trying to get away from answering this question because I can tell you in my life, I've gone through a lot of this issue. If you're wanting to know what I do, I'm happy to talk about that. For our family, if we can avoid eating out, we try to. That's the way that we try to do it. Now, I have worked for conferences where I was traveling a ton, and there were churches that didn't have a meal after church, and I'm 3 hours from home. We're going to get food. We're going to do it. There have been times here where I have a special person that's in town, and for whatever reason, it's that everybody's going to go grab a meal after church, and I'll go do it. Because for me, it's about relationship. It's about what I try to do personally in my own life is I try to avoid creating work for other people. Not because those people wouldn't have been working anyway, but because I just think the world would be a better place if everybody got a day off and we all took it at the same time. I just think that's the way it would be. It would be better. And so out of principle, I fear if enough people quit working on Sabbath, that we would get ourselves down to where it was really only very essential things that were happening. And everybody, and I think the world would be better if everybody just got to take a break together on that. I mean, I don't think that's something that should be legislated. I think this is a free will kind of thing that people can do, but I do think that it would be just really nice. And so that's one of the reasons why in general, I'll try to avoid it. Now, I remember hearing a while ago, a prominent Adventist paraministry leader condemning people who went to church and then went and got a meal afterwards and think may have used the word that they're going to hell if they do that. And it struck me that the sermon that was being given was in a hotel on Sabbath with a fully catered meal inside that hotel. And I'm sure that the meal was paid for on Friday, but it struck me a little bit as just maybe blatantly not seeing this speck in someone else's eye when you can condemn somebody for going for a simple meal after a church service, but you're going to have an entire event several times a year in a nice hotel from Friday night till Sunday morning with meals that are being catered, and you don't see that maybe that's creating work for a lot of hotel staff.
Would that be like straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel?
For me, it felt that way. And I want to be careful, but it sure frustrates me because, again, I mentioned this in the sermon. I went to a very, very, grew up in a very conservative Christian community, a Seventh-day Adventist community. And the Adventist high school that I went to was very particular about what we could and could not do on Sabbath. But you know what? They didn't have a problem. They had a whole bunch of, they had industries. One of them in particular was a retirement center. I mean, these were people who were able to take care of themselves who had retired, and they lived in the center. Most of them had a kitchen in their apartment or a home that they were staying in. Depending on the package they bought, they were entitled to one meal or more a day in the cafeteria, if you will. It was actually a very nice restaurant. And the public, 6 days a week, could come in and eat in that restaurant. We sold meals. It was a vegetarian restaurant, so it was usually pretty full. But the fullest day of the week by far and away was Sabbath. It was absolutely packed in there. But nobody could buy a meal on Sabbath. They had to prepay during the week beforehand. They didn't have to come to the meal with a resident of the inn. And so those of us who are working there decided to challenge. We're like, well, why do we have to work on Sabbath? And I'll never forget the president of the organization coming down and lecturing us about how we were lazy and didn't, and trying to get out of work, which there might have been some truth to trying to get out of the work part of it. But I'll never forget that he's like, well, don't you invite people over to your house for Sabbath morning? And I said, yeah, I don't charge them money. I don't charge them to eat. And he's like, well, I mean, but... And there was...
So it's just unpaid labor.
Apparently, yeah, well, that's it. And yeah. And I get it. Like, I totally get it. Like, hospitals, thank goodness for the professionals that keep hospitals open 7 days a week.
Yeah. And even in the cafeteria.
Yeah, get hungry. Absolutely. But I think that the problem often becomes when we start trying to have this conversation about what's okay and what's not okay. And then suddenly we find loopholes and ways of making this okay. And it's okay for me to do this. It's not okay for you to do that. And my question for everybody is, what is it that God's asking you to do? What is it that's going to help you enter into deep relationship with God? And I'm not here to spend a lot of time trying to, if you're not hurting someone else, I'm just not here to spend a whole lot of time trying to parse out every little thing. And so,
like you said, all good metaphors fall apart sometimes.
They all fall apart somewhere. So anyway, that was a less delicate way of saying what I said on Sabbath, I guess. But it's something that it just troubled me because, again, through the years, you'll see these kind of things. And so the question becomes, like I said, for me, I try to avoid it if I can. Not because I think that I'm a great sinner if that happens, but just because my preference is if I can not create work for somebody else, I'd like to not create work for somebody else. If I can go ahead and I've had people come and say, when I've said that, like, oh, but Ken, it saves me work that I don't have to cook at home and it's so much easier. And I'm like, hey, you don't have to convince me.
Yeah.
That's that's you and your walk with God to figure out. But when I look at the commandment, what I see it saying is, do everything that you can to create space to have a relationship with God and give other people the same opportunity. And not just people, but the animals and the land itself.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. You invited the creatures to...
It does leave out one particular demographic, which Ken and I
Melanie's
also
Melanie's
going to
go there with, okay, do it. Let's do
what
it.
What you got?
Let's go.
Well, it says you and your manservant, your maidservant, your cattle, all your stranger within
your son, your daughter.
Gates, your son, your daughter. Doesn't say anything about your wife.
It doesn't. And that's why she cooks in the kitchen.
And I think that I think that's because women don't have a choice but to work. I mean, who's going to prepare the meal? I mean, now it's 2026. So, you know, it's spread out a little bit better. But historically, throughout time, the way that people didn't work on the Sabbath was because their wives were working on the Sabbath. And actually, technically, the way that we did it when I grew up was you cooked
the
day
food
before.
Was made on Friday.
And then all you had to do was heat it up or pull it out of
the
refrigerator.
What's the matter with the soggy broccoli? It was almost like it was made yesterday.
Yeah, no, that's how it was for sure in my house that we, and yeah. And I've been in, you know, where the dishes don't get done till after Sabbath either. And
we did dishes. There was no way
that
around
was
that.
Legal, huh? Yeah.
No, that was always my thing too. I was like, wait a minute. Why?
I will say though that in the Jewish community that I was talking about a little bit earlier in the podcast, they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The food is prepared on Friday. It is brought out. It's usually stuff that doesn't, the stuff that I ate, at least at the meal that I was at the synagogue, was mostly stuff that could be just pulled out of a refrigerator and didn't take a lot of extra work. And then the dishes gloriously nothing was done. They sat and they could wait. And to me, there is something beautiful about just letting it not taking care of that until later.
Well, and the beautiful part is, I mean, everyone loves to graze, especially if you have people over. If you kind of just leave it out a little bit and people walk by like, oh, man, that was really good. Where's the forks? Yeah. You hear a drawer come open and then all of a sudden like, oh, that is still good, even cold, you know, and it's like, hey, that's being hospitable.
So what are some of your favorite things? Like one of my favorite things that I have done with my family on Sabbath was that we would actually light candles on Friday night when it was right at sundown. And that could be challenging depending on the time of the year, but we would light candles and go through the days of creation. And then we had a special meal that we would only eat on Friday nights that was like the kids would really look forward to. And then one of my traditions was I'd wake up Sabbath morning early before I went to preach, and I would make pancakes for the kids before we went off to church. And then again, we, you know, depending on what was happening, there would be lunch, but those are for me some really good memories of just being together and just connecting with each other and connecting with God and having conversations with our kids about those kind of things. That was one of my favorites.
Yeah, Friday nights was always, especially wintertime, because when you're up north, it's even earlier. You know, it's like 3:30 in the afternoon and it's dark already. And you're like, well, now what do we do until this time tomorrow? You know, there's for kids, it's like, eh. But it was always a special meal on Friday night. And in the winter, it was always my mom's homemade chili, fresh bread, and then a special ice cream that we got at the local dairy that was something good. And now, Lucas is kind of part of the family. Well, not kind of. He is part of the family. So he gets, on the weekends, he's here. And we didn't do anything this weekend since you weren't here. But Heather makes either like fresh scones or... cinnamon rolls, cinnamon, and brings them in, and then that's a
that's a
good morning treat for us. That's a Sabbath special that we don't usually get otherwise.
Yeah,
that's something fun that we enjoy. And then depending how many people see Heather or Ellie bring the pan up as to how many Lucas and I get before.
I keep forgetting to come by your office on Sabbath mornings.
Yeah, since she's been doing the scones too, we've been really liking the scones as well. So, Melanie, anything at your family?
It's varied throughout time and depending on what's happening in our lives. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, Friday afternoons always smelled like spray starch because my mom was ironing our clothes for church. I have memories of like walking down the hall and, oh, I smell Friday afternoon because I smell spray starch. And I think one of the other fun things when I was a kid is we always got together with somebody on Saturday. So it was, and I think that's the cool thing about everybody not working is that people are available to do those things. So we would always have somebody come over, or we would go over to somebody's house. It would be an all day thing. And then we'd hang out and we'd make popcorn and apples and sing a hymn or whatever in the evening. So, I mean, there are some fun memories that I have of just that time together. And then, you know, when I became a parent, though, you know, I started kind of sifting through all those strange rules that we had, you know, you can do this, but you can't do this. You can do this, but you can't do this. And trying to figure out, all right, what do I want to implement now to make Sabbath different from the other days with my kids? I don't think I did a fantastic job at it, but it was a little bit of an evaluation of, all right, what do I want to keep? What do I want to let go of? You know, for example, when I was in school, when I was doing my PhD program, I was reading 800 pages a week of academic material. When Saturday came around, I did not read any academic material whatsoever. But now I'm not in school. Now, if I want to go lay in bed on Friday afternoon and read something, you know, from a theological philosophy book or something like that, that's not work for me anymore because I'm not in school. So I think it also varies. And I think that you can make decisions depending on what's happening in your life about what Sabbath looks like for you, what is going to create the most connection, what is going to make you feel the most replenished as a human. And yeah, it might change.
You know, since we're going to go with the vehicle metaphor, there's points in your life where you're driving a minivan, and then there's other points in your life where maybe you have a sports car. And so it's dependent. But the point is that you're trying to get to a certain destination, and what's the best vehicle to get you there? And that's the point I would just make to everybody listening to this. It is easy to say, what can I do? What shouldn't I do? But the big question is, what is the vehicle that's going to help you get to the destination of remembering your creator and remembering that you're loved and you're desired and building that relationship with your creator and the things that the creator has created.
Nice. Lucas?
I actually have a very fun memory. So 1 hour before every sunset, my dad will grab me and my brother, and we had 3 irons, and we were all ironing our clothes for Sabbath.
Together.
And then we just like talk, you know, about the week. And then we started doing that when we were 10 years old. And then until like I leave my house 20 something.
Wow.
Cool. Cool. All right. Well, we have a couple more things to get to here. Roxana and Randy both wrote in via Slack. And so let's get to those as we begin to wrap everything up. Roxana said, I just finished listening to the Don't Forget Sacrifice sermon. Very intriguing. Have to listen again just to refresh on the points given. It went in a wonderfully unexpected direction that included science findings and outcomes, things I would have never thought about. I'm finding myself with some frustrations, both career and personal, and I get that I'm supposed to count my blessings, but that can get into toxic positivity quick, easy for me to say, and it feels disingenuous. Remembering the sacrifice of others removes the me focus and highlights the gifts of someone else. It is a great humbling experience and makes me more appreciative. P.S. Just now listening to the podcast, it's Chick-fil-A who always answers my pleasure, Randy. Your daughter would be so disappointed you didn't know. Womp, womp, womp. My youngest daughter would absolutely be devastated that I didn't know. Maybe a little bit less since we have banned her from Chick-fil-A and as part of a workout routine at the gym, swimming and shedding a little extra.
Banned altogether? What about moderation?
No.
No moderation.
Don't they have salads?
There's so many. But
what a disappointment. Yeah. Like going to Chick-fil-A. Here's your salad. I'm sure Emily would be thrilled.
Their salads are very good.
She doesn't eat green stuff. One. Two, she would look at that salad and then she'd see the grilled chicken and she'd be like, no, thank you. And so that's money just wasted. So yeah, well,
fair enough.
Have to go someplace else, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
Or fortunately, either way. All right. Randy wrote in and said, it's been a bit quiet here on Slack. Wow, man.
Quiet.
I need to get glasses. Quiet. Thank you, Ken. So I'll make a little noise. I just got back home to Melbourne on May 31st after 3 weeks working in Incheon, South Korea.
Oh, wow.
Where we currently lease an Airbus A220 simulator. Oh, come on, Randy, you do the coolest things. During the visit, I had the opportunity and took it to go to the top of the Lotte Tower in Seoul, L-O-T-T-E. Okay. It is the sixth tallest building in the world. I then took the tour up the Sky Bridge. It's the highest bridge on any structure at 555 meters. That's 1,820 feet for my USA and British friends. Thank you. Thank you so much. So she attached pictures, and the view is spectacular. That is in Slack, so if you want to check that out, and they are pretty spectacular, you should go to the Slack channel. I can say that South Korea and the Korean people are lovely, and one of the things I enjoyed most was walking on some of the walking paths near the hotel. The forest and hills reminded me of Southeast Tennessee, Northeast Georgia, and over into the Western Carolinas. Prior to my trip, someone told me, and I don't remember who, make sure to go hiking while there. They were so right. One last seemingly unrelated thought. My GP, primary care doctor, GP here in Oz, is a recent immigrant to Australia, similar to Myra and I, and she immigrated from Iran about a year also. Holy wow. Sorry, Randy, I'm just butchering this to bits. So what is my point with all these ramblings? When we look at the state of affairs in the world, the conflicts, the hate based in where someone is from or how someone knows themselves to be, what color skin, melanin challenged like me or blessed with warmer skin tones, what foods we eat and enjoy, the spices we use or as our main go-tos, what styles we wear, languages we speak, how we dance, what faith tradition we come from or no tradition at all, we are all more alike than different. We are all, most of us anyway, seeking love, inclusion, joy, and relationship. If we as followers of Jesus do not bring the fruit of the Spirit where we go, it seems to me we are missing the point of what we call Christianity. Just a bit of food for thought in the context of the latest sermon series. Well, look, that's extra credit to take the last couple of weeks and also correlate those to the latest sermon series. So
nice
to hear from you. So thank you for the update. And if you would like to check out those pictures, which are pretty cool, and there's like rigging, there's ropes and pulleys and dangerous things happening in some of the photos. So, you know, view at your own discretion. If you're afraid of heights, might not be your thing, but send me an email from that you'd like to be subscribed to our Slack channel, and I will give you entrance right away, podcast@wholelife.church. Just send it from the email you'd like to be subscribed from. Let's see. VBS is very close to being closed. So if you're still looking to get your child registered, wholelife.church/VBS, it's going to be closed soon. I think sometime this week. I'm not sure exactly when. Well, as soon as we know, we will let you know. But if you've been thinking, maybe I should, do it quick.
You should.
New giving platform launched last week and on Saturday, which didn't get like anyone that's like, hey, I don't know what to do. Hey, I'm struggling. Hey, this is difficult. It was all like, thanks for making this easy.
Yeah. And so, we encourage everybody to, you know, try it out. Just put $50,000 in and just see what happens. We'll
let the zeros do what they may.
Yeah, just add zeros.
Yeah. Yeah. Wholelife.church/give.
Just make sure there's one whole number before the zero.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a good catch. So it's a mobile, super mobile friendly. And the instructions, if you need some, I doubt you will, but if you do, there's a second button on the page. It's a little gray button that says tutorial, and it will open a PDF. So like if.
So Randy, I've said it a number of times, and so it's for those of you who heard it for the 50th time.
Yeah.
Why are we changing platforms? Well, it's because it's going to save us a fair amount of money. It integrates with our member management system much better.
Yep.
And so, so we appreciate you. If you already have reoccurring giving set up on the current online giving platform, we're just really grateful that you're going to take the time to change that over to the new platform that'll help us save probably pretty close to $50,000 a year, and also help us integrate better into the system. So thank you for all that. We really appreciate it. We know it's you don't have to give, and so we're really grateful that you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And someone said, well, what if I've never given before? And I'm like, well, here's your chance.
We'd be happy to help you learn how. It's easy.
That's it. And it is. Guys, super, super easy. And again, that PDF will walk you through step by step. We made it so easy. There's even arrows on the screen for every last prompt. So it won't be like you're looking and going, I don't know what to do.
I have a question. I don't know if I know the answer to this. So edit it out if you don't want to. But can you use Google Pay or Apple Pay on there?
Not yet, but I have an email out to the person who does, who will know, and if he doesn't, he'll find out. So I haven't heard back yet.
But okay.
As soon as I do, there might be an opportunity in the future for you to just tap your phone in certain places here at the church or online. I don't know if there'll be an online for that, but I know there are like discs that we have now in the back of the chairs and the giving boxes. There might be some that you'll see pop up from time to time. Cool. That'll let you do it that way too. That's even easier.
So yet, exciting.
Right? So lots of cool things going on there. VBS, man. Oh, and just congrats to everyone that joined the PGI conversation this past Saturday. All I've heard
was really good.
Super good things. And guys, that's just another way that we're trying to all learn how to communicate better, how to be more inclusive, and how to communicate with people that maybe we just haven't communicated with before and don't want to get it wrong. We want to get it right. And it's just another initiative that the Justice Ministries department here.
Kudos to Anderlene and her Justice Ministries Advisory Council that just put that together. Thank you, Rachel, from the Peace and Justice Institute. Appreciate you being here. It was just so good. It was an excellent, excellent Sabbath afternoon.
And there are three more. Lucas, on the events calendar, where do they find that? Because there was
fulllife.church/events. Is that what you're saying?
And then there's a community, what's that called?
Partners.
Yes, the community partners. Just click on that one and all of those upcoming, because they're all kind of similar in nature about communication. And we'll be partnering in during this series. There was four. This was the first one, so you still have time to catch the other three. So be looking for that. It's in the paper flyers around the church or on the events page. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week. Thanks for listening to This Is Whole Life. If today's conversation resonated with you, we invite you to subscribe, share, and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. To join the conversation, send a text or voicemail to 407-965-1607 or email podcast@wholelife.church. To learn more about Whole Life Church, worship with us online or in person, visit our website, wholelife.church. Until next time, this is Whole Life.